Hello and welcome to The Backside of Water, a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. I'm Alex Stewart.
And I'm Harrison Ownby, and today we are proud to present Part 3. This is the first time we've done a three-part series on an attraction, Part 3 of our Big Thunder Mountain episode. In Part 1, we discussed Thunder Mesa, the mine train through Nature's Wonderland, and the venerable Rainbow Caverns.
And in Part 2, we covered the awesome Discovery Bay, the land in Disneyland that never was, took a virtual tour of the tracks on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, and discussed the incredible technology behind what makes this mountain so big and thunder. Now, in Part 3, we're going to continue where we left off. If you remember, we had to take off our temporal holographic ultra-neural Disney experience recreators.
Or Thunder for short.
Because if you leave these powerful virtual reality goggles on for too long, you get extremely disoriented and some other unpleasant side effects. So we stopped our tour after discussing the track and the experience that I had working on the attraction. But after we had a good night's sleep on the Wild Frontier,
and a few piping hot cups of Trader Sam's coffee as prepared by Cookie, our wilderness guide, we're ready to tackle Part 3 of our Big Thunder Mountain Railroad episode extravaganza. But before we slip on these thunder goggles again, we need to tell you folks how you can save 20%, that's right, 20% on Trader Sam's delicious Disney-inspired coffees. Cookie.
I'd be pleased as a prospector with a pan full of nuggets to tell you that if you go to TraderSamsCoffee.com and enter backside 20 with no spaces and the actual number 20 at checkout, you'll save 20% off your hard-earned prospectoring gold when you spend it on Trader Sam's savory roasted beans. They're premium They're Arabica beans. Is that how I say that, Harrison?
That's how I'd say it, although you're asking a guy who's notorious for... who's a serial mispronouncer.
Oh, fair enough. Well, let's just pretend like it says Arabica beans are certified allergen and gluten-free. They'll help you brew your happy place whenever you want it.
I can't think of anything I'd rather do with my prospectin' gold than get some delicious Trader Sam's coffee. I'm currently sipping on a little mixture of steamed milk and the bobsledders brew. It is absolutely divine. Thanks for this info, Cookie.
Yes, I also woke up this morning to a nice Main Street Colombian coffee roast, which is just a delightful way to start my day. So thanks again, Cookie, and thanks to Trader Sam's Coffee Company for creating one of the most delicious things I've tasted since, here goes, Dole Whipped Soaked Churro Pizza.
Dude, that was one of the best treats I've ever had at somebody's 31st birthday bash. Compliments to the chef on that one.
Well, I'll tell you, my wife was a little hesitant when I told her about the mandatory 29-hour Dole Whip soak that the churros underwent, but once she got a ladle full of that delicious sauce, her mind was changed.
And thankfully so. Well, Harry, are you ready to slip these goggles on and continue our tour of the biggest, thunderinest mountain on this side of the rivers of America?
Woo-wee! I'm holding on to my hats and glasses. Here we go!
Welcome to Thunder. Initiating park experience simulation. Target location, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, cave entrance.
Whoa!
Wow, Al, I don't think I'll ever get used to how realistic this technology is. It feels like we're actually standing in front of the cave that leads us into the attraction itself.
I know, this brings back a flood of memories for me as a former cast member. So why don't we begin our walking tour just like I did in the days of yore.
So we're walking through this first tunnel, and of course, the very thing that kicks the attraction off, the bats.
Yeah, it's a piece that's often overlooked. I think that the majority of people are so distracted by the ear-piercing clatter that goes through this area that they don't even have time to look around.
Don't look around.
It throws you into pure anxious terror when you hear that sound as you're going through that area.
Wow, Al, sounds like this is like the therapy part of the podcast.
Oh, I love this ride. I love this ride, and I love being in this tunnel. But the thing that I just hate, I'm like a house cat in that way. When it's just really loud, obnoxious noises like that, it really sets me on edge. I'm not going to lie.
You got to stay on your toes. You were a Jungle Cruise skipper after all. Yeah, you let your guard down for a second, and you get attacked by natives. That's what I hear.
Exactly. Now, the Imagineers wanted riders on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad to experience spelunking in the most logical order possible. And what better way to do that than first encounter the thing that you would see at the mouth of the cave?
I also love that the bats give you a feeling of foreboding as well. These bats let you know that you are not on your way to a scenic sightseeing trip around the canyons of Rainbow Ridge. As we round this slight corner, I'm actually seeing something that looks really familiar.
And what would that be?
Well, Alex, if you look over to the rainbow pools on the left side of the track...
I've always loved those pools.
Those pools are an Imagineering callback to the rainbow-colored pools from the Rainbow Caverns attraction that once stood on this site.
That's awesome. I that's the thing that I love about this. I love the fact that, again, we talked about this, I think, in the previous episode, where Tony Baxter is such just a Disney fan that Everything about his attractions just ekes and seeps with excitement and Disney nerddom. And this is, again, one of those things where you see him saying, hey, this is something from Disney past. I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah, he's very respectful of the Disney company legacy.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that I don't know, maybe you can tell me if I should talk about this or not, Harry. Maybe it's just too deep nerd. But
no.
I do get, like, I used to get a lot of questions about if say, the ride breaks down and you are going up the slope on one of these attractions, what would happen? Would, like, the whole train car come loose and you just shoot backwards? What would that actually look like?
Sure, you travel back in time, I think.
Well, yeah, exactly. As long as you hit that, 86 miles per hour. So essentially what happens with this is, I don't realize, or think a lot of people realize, that the power from Big Thunder Mountain comes straight from gravity for the most part. That as you're going up...
That's really surprising.
Yeah, as you're going up these inclines, essentially it's just a giant cog system that pulls you up. And so if you were to stop on the mountain... This is actually where we do most, or where we did most of the evacuations, was when we were on the hills, is because that's where they stop, and the ride is designed in such a way that it actually will stop in place on those inclines. Basically, it's a giant braking system of sorts as you go up. So if you were to stop on the incline and the ride were to break down, you would literally just sit on that incline until we as cast members came moseying on out. And helping you in that situation. But going back to how the ride operates is essentially once you get to the top of these things, as you do your little click, clack all the way up, once you get to the crest, gravity does the rest of the job for you right there. And with the exception of a couple of the limb systems out on the track itself, for the most part, you're just basically going off of the concept that if you were to put the marble at the top of the stairs and roll it down, that's the same thing that's happening with Big Thunder Mountain.
That's fascinating. And could you go back and re-explain limb again? I know you explained that in episode 2, but...
Yes, correct. Good. I'm glad you brought that up, Harry, because I would have passed right over that. So the linear induction motors, if you listen to the episode previous to this, you learn that linear induction motors are basically magnets with the same poles. So instead of attracting to one another, they repel one another, and that's actually what causes the trains to move forward on Big Thunder Mountain, is through that linear induction. So if you look up ahead there, on the Jungle Cruise, we go behind a waterfall and see our namesake, the Backside of Water, but here on Big Thunder Mountain, we're actually going to go right through the waterfall. Now, I can't help but think that this waterfall is definitely a callback to the waterfall that you see on the Rainbow Caverns attraction, that is called Big Thunder.
That's amazing. I didn't realize there was a waterfall called Big Thunder in Rainbow Caverns. And I think that that's definitely the waterfall that you go through for Big Thunder Mountain. I mean, it makes sense. And I think that's the name of the attraction. That's the reasoning behind it.
I agree. I think, well, and here's the weird thing is, I know we may have talked about this in the past, but my wife and I this last summer went on a road trip up to South Dakota. And when we were up there, we got a Groupon to tour the Big Thunder Gold Mine. And so I don't know if there was any connection to that. I mean, from what I'm understanding, the reason why they named this the Big Thunder Gold Mine was simply because that's the sound that dynamite makes. But, I mean, this was one of the... this was operating still in, like, the 50s or the 60s. And so it makes you wonder if there was at least some sort of inspiration from Tony Baxter with this place that we went up in South Dakota.
Interesting.
And so I don't know if it does connect or not, but I think that it actually is kind of a fun little tidbit of knowledge. And if you're in South Dakota, check out Big Thunder Gold Mine, because it makes you feel like you're in Disneyland.
All three of you up there.
Yes. So, I don't know. Personally, I think that's a really cool... And again, there's no way for us to truly confirm that unless we were to talk to Tony Baxter about the waterfall being called Big Thunder, throwing back to the Rainbow Caverns. But it just seems too perfect not to be set up that way.
It does. It is. That would be quite a coincidence, which, not saying it couldn't be a coincidence, but that would be quite a coincidence.
I completely agree.
So after the first waterfall, you go down the first waterfall, the only waterfall. After the waterfall, you go down the first drop. And in the story of the attraction, this is where the spirit takes over and the train hurls us through the landscape. Like we talk about in our last episode, you can see the variations in the track that causes this to feel like a truly wild ride.
Now that's what I love about this ride, is that you are authentically yet safely jostled on it. I just went to Walt Disney World, and by the way, we are going to be very, very soon releasing a trip report over on our sister podcast, Did You Know Disney? So
Woo-hoo. We
also have some announcements at the end of this episode to make about that. So hold on to your hats and glasses for that one. But I just went to Walt Disney World and rode the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train while I was there. And it has a really similar vibe to it as Thunder does. I don't know if you agree with that or not, Harry, but it just feels very, very much like they were kindred spirits.
Well, absolutely. It's two mining trains. I mean, it's the same kind of idea.
And the interesting thing is, I feel like the wild feeling on that Seven Dwarfs mine train is created by the carts tilting on their bases instead of reacting to the rough terrain of the track itself. Now, this made for like a crazy super smooth ride, but it didn't actually make the ride feel authentically Seven Dwarfs built this track out in the middle of nowhere.
It's too slick. It's too slick.
It was insanely slick. It was like riding on butter the entire time. And I was like, man, these dwarfs really know their engineering. That's impressive. As we walk through this area, notice that you can actually hear the coyotes howling. And this is the area with the possums hanging from the tree. When you pass under on the train, these guys flip around the tree. I don't know if people notice that because it happens so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But the coyotes and the possums are both callbacks to the mine train through Nature's Wonderland. Again, sprinkles of the past.
That's awesome.
Another thing that I need to point out here is insider information. According to local miner legend, i.e. cast members on Big Thunder Mountain,
mm-hmm.
this area is one of the areas that is prominently haunted on Big Thunder Mountain. This is where the majority of people
around the possums?
Yeah, around the possum area. That's where a lot of people see/experience weird goings-on.
Really? Did you ever experience any weird goings-on around the possums?
Thank heavens, no. But every single time I walked through that area, yeesh. No thank you.
Oh, man. Well, I am not a fan of possums in general. They give me the heebie-jeebies, so it makes sense that they would make the track haunted.
I agree. Now, as we walk further on here, take a look behind you, Harry.
Oh, yeah?
Now, notice that big spiral formation behind us. It was inspired by the rock formations in Bryce Canyon out in Utah. This is one of the big differences between Walt Disney World and Disneyland. Speaking of Utah, we must do a little shout-out to our buddies over at the Word on the Main Street podcast.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys.
They're all from Utah, and so hopefully they can hear us from here. And if you get a chance, please make an effort to get over to Word on the Main Street. We are going to be having them on an episode soon, and very soon. So if you guys are listening to this, get in contact with us because we want to get you on the show soon.
Hear, hear.
So this is one of the big differences, like I said, between Walt Disney World and Disneyland. Big Thunder in Walt Disney World is inspired by Monument Valley in Arizona, which is also the inspiration for Cars Land, which is really interesting. So you see,
really?
You definitely see different, well, because in Cars Land, it's called Ornament Valley, but the design that John Lasseter and the Cars team took was in this Monument Valley in Arizona. So you're seeing connections all over the place. But here's the interesting thing. In Disneyland, since Frontierland is so close to Fantasyland, Imagineers knew that people would see the spires of this mountain from Fantasyland. So they decided to model this area after a more whimsical-looking area of the country. They found this whimsical look in nature in the hoodoos of Bryce Canyon. But also notice that as we walk the track here, it looks like it cuts through the land instead of simply running through the area really naturally, or I should say really contrived and fake. Tony Baxter designed the attraction as though this mountain had been here for millennia before the train ran through it. That's what I think is cool. It's these little design elements that make me so appreciate Baxter's aesthetic and skill as an Imagineer to go to the efforts to really think about that. Again, not just take it and say we're in a park in Anaheim, but instead we're in Bryce Canyon in the middle of Utah. What would that look like?
Absolutely. And realizing the details really make the experience. So we now pass through this tunnel and make it to what we call the B lift, or the second lift of the attraction. So on the left side of the tracks, you'll see three large cogs placed in a familiar shape. That's right, this is the attraction's hidden Mickey. I also want to talk about Disney's masterful use of space. As you climb this hill, you would never know it, but you could pretty much throw a churro and hit the castle from this point. It blows my mind how well they utilize space, and the fact that they are so able to mask the surroundings as well as they are.
Oh, I completely agree. Now, the only way I discovered how close this track is to the castle was a chance evacuation that occurred during the fireworks.
You'd never know it otherwise.
Can I share that story, because it was...
I didn't
share that on the last episode, did I?
No, you didn't. You talked about evacuations where people were able to see more of the park more in a different way, you know, on a walking tour. But you didn't talk about the specific incident.
The thing that was really cool about that was it was during the Remember Dreams Come True fireworks show. I think it was called Wishes, is what it was. Remember Dreams Come True.
Yeah, yeah.
And during that one of those sequences, you have these pinwheels going off as the Mad Hatter sequence is going. And right as we got up to the train, that started. And you could almost feel the heat of those pinwheels going off, because you are literally that close to the castle from where you're at on this B-lift area right here. And I remember that we definitely took a little bit more time. It was kind of like a Sandlot situation. Like, you've seen that scene in the Sandlot during the 4th of July when they're playing baseball during the fireworks. Mm-hmm. And all the kids are just distracted from playing the game because the overhead show is just so captivating.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of what it was like during this evacuation.
Yeah.
That it was one of those moments where people were trying, you could tell, almost to delay themselves from being able to get off the attraction, simply because it was just so awesome having that, like, front row seat to watching the fireworks. That is, like, one of the most vivid memories that I have of working on Big Thunder Mountain, was that one evacuation.
Wow. Well, Big Thunder Mountain is an amazing place. If you can ride the attraction while the fireworks are in progress, some people like to stand and watch them from a point. Another great way is to ride Big Thunder Mountain, because you see incredible views of the fireworks from that attraction.
Oh, without a doubt, they are right over you. Because again, they closed down all of Fantasyland during that time, and with Big Thunder being so close to Fantasyland, I'll tell you this little secret. That this was back in 2008 when they weren't, unfortunately, canceling Southern California annual passes like we just got the news today because of overcrowding and capacity issues. But back in 2008, when the park was a ghost town, you could actually go in and just basically stand in the queue area. And there would be, you know, sometimes 3 or 4 minutes where we as cast members who were in the load area where we were sectioning people off into their trains would just be able to stand there in the station and watch those fireworks illuminate the entire night sky. And there's nothing cooler, in my opinion, than standing inside that train station and watching the floor and the shadow work that plays off of the floor area during the fireworks during that time. It is just beyond magical.
Yeah, and you can use your imagination to pretend you're in the old town of Rainbow Ridge and they're celebrating a new load of gold or whatever else. Like, really, like, that's the beautiful thing about Disneyland is you can be in there and you can imagine you're in all these different scenarios and they all work together. It's a magical place, folks. That's what we're here to tell you. So as we walk up the hill, we need to take a look on the right side of the track. And these little areas, you will see what looks to be tin snips or some pretty funky pruning shears. This device is actually Get ready for it, folks. Bull castrators.
Ouch!
Well, Alex, nobody said ranching was pretty, and ranching is even uglier if you don't have a good pair of bull castrators, believe me. We also can't deny that the view on the left side of the track is beyond beautiful. Another great view of the Bryce Canyon hoodoos.
This is the most immersive area of the attraction because everywhere you look is thunderized. And I think it's cool because on that rise, you can look over the edge and see the track below you and see the mountain. It's just awesome. And of course, you've got the little rattlesnakes going all the way up the way there.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Now, as we crest this hill, we're going to see
the goat. This beast is a piece of Disney lore and legend. It even has its own Facebook page.
Does it really?
Yeah, it does. The last update, unfortunately, was like 2011, and it's just bah. And then another update, like in 2007, was also bah. So whoever, if you own the goat, the Big Thunder Mountain Goat Facebook page, you know, you're really, this is like 6,000 likes, you know. You're sitting on a gold mine here, so I think it could be used to better effect. But it does have its own Facebook page.
That's pretty amazing. Now, a little insider with this goat: if you make an effort to stare at this goat as long as possible, following it with your head as you go around the corner, it gives you this insane feeling of vertigo.
Yes, because you're turning your head one way and you're going around the corner the other way, and it's really disorienting. If you're into that, it's really fun.
Oh, without a doubt, and.
Yeah, you feel it in the pit of your stomach.
Well, and another thing that enhances it completely is, did I ever talk about the back row of the train last episode? It's been so long since we've talked.
No, you didn't talk about the back row.
Yeah, well, a little insider tip. If you want to, you can request the back row, and when you watch that goat from the back row, it is the most insane feeling, and this is no exaggeration, it's the most insane feeling that you can feel on an attraction in the entire park.
Really?
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Just getting whipped around while you're in the back looking at the goat. All right. I think that's officially called the goat trick, by the way. Really, like as I was doing research online, people were like, you know about the goat trick? The goat trick on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. So, you know, if you're looking this up for yourself, you can tell your friends about the goat trick. And I think the goat also has many levels. It's a great gag, and it adds to the tongue-in-cheek danger that the attraction is famous for.
I also wonder, like I can't help but be curious, did they plan that, or was that just like a happy accident that would work? And I'm wondering who the first person was to discover the vertigoat. Oh,
that's a way better name than the goat trick.
I agree. I just coined that.
Yeah, well, tell your friends. Hashtag vertigoat. Let's blow this up. I don't know how you do viral marketing. If I did, we'd have more listeners.
Yeah, I agree. Now, as we travel from this point, we're going to be going down in through the frontier, bumping, jarring, rolling, and heaving our way over the landscape. Since there's not a ton to point out in this section, it might be good to note that the track does look a little different than it used to.
That's because in 2013, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad went through a massive refurbishment that included the installation of all new track throughout almost the entire attraction. The company that was contracted is the same company that installed the new track during Space Mountain's 2005 refurbishment. I love the juxtaposition of old and new in this track. And coincidentally, so did Steven Spielberg.
Spielberg?
Yeah, it kind of came out of left field, but stick with me. Steven Spielberg used recorded audio of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad for Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Which is amazing. The sound of the mine...
That's incredible.
Right? The sound of the mine carts racing down the tracks in the Temple of Doom is actually the sound of the train barreling down the tracks of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
That's incredible. Do you think that he was just riding the ride one day and was like, we need this?
I don't know how movie magic works. He probably had nothing to do with it. Just like an audio engineer is like, here's a sound. And Steven Spielberg's like, I like that. And then the audio engineer's like, it's the Big Thunder Mountain tracks, and I'm a big fan. But yeah. I don't know.
That's incredible. I love that story. That is something that I didn't know about this ride.
It is so cool to see how Disneyland has affected so many things. And there's so many things that this place that was once Walt Disney's dream to build has inspired other artists to go and do other things with what Walt Disney built, including two morons to start a podcast.
And it's called Did You Know Disney, not the Backside of Water.
No.
So I think that I love the fact that it's a super smooth ride tracking system that's also intentionally loud and jarring at the same time. And speaking of which, we're actually coming to a very jarring area. This is the Spiral Mountain portion of the attraction. Now, to my understanding, this is one of the only roller coasters that does a complete 360-degree spiral all the way down. The effect during the attraction makes it feel as though you're spinning forever, even though it's just a couple of seconds.
The spiral absolutely gives you a crazy rush. And now we roll into one of my favorite show scenes in all the park.
This area is what we call, as miners, Sea Lift, the climax of the story.
And as we roll into the shed, we see that the spirit has started the dynamite charges, which line the walls.
Now, here's the interesting thing, is in the new show, there's actually a little different change according to the show lineup, that they say that the goat that gives you vertigo is the one who got into the dynamite shed and is the one who's actually tripped the line throughout the entire area that's led up to this Sea Lift explosion. So it's not the spirit anymore that has started the dynamite charge. It's the goat chewing on the dynamite that made that happen.
The goat chupacabra-ing the dynamite.
Oh.
That's no vertigo. I'll grant you that. I
but
like that
still
though.
A good effort.
I like that they integrated the goat a little bit further into your danger. I always knew that thing was up to no good. So
now I'm curious, Harry. You haven't ridden it since the update, right?
I have not. I watched a YouTube of the new updated effects, and it looked like a lot of fun. It's not even close to being there and experiencing it and smelling the smells and feeling the rumbling coaster in your hands and everything and the wind in your hair and the fluffy clouds above you, but it looked like a fun show. It definitely was an improvement, too. I thought it was good before, but it wasn't great. But by that point, I'd had so much fun getting there that I didn't really care, and I didn't realize that the show was missing kind of at this point.
Yeah.
Well, there was a little punch that was missing.
Yeah, and so explain what the pre-2013 version looked like and what it looks like now, just so people can have kind of a compare contrast there.
Yes. Well, what I remember about the pre-2013 refurbishment is you went into a little area and it just kind of started shaking and steam would come out of the rocks and the walls a little bit, and they would just kind of quake, and then you'd shoot out, and that's pretty much it. And it was sort of like the mountain was going to cave in, and oh, you're going to be trapped, but of course you're like, haha. I didn't even put that together, really. Uh-huh. I was like, oh, it's a rumbling, whatever, it's rumbling because of whatever. But this time, they made it a lot more clear that there's an explosion that occurs. So there's new audio and new lighting and steam. And so you know that something blows up from the goat setting off the dynamite in the tunnel.
I personally love the update. I think that it is significantly better than what they had before and what they have down at Walt Disney World right now.
Oh, which is good, because I think previously the Walt Disney World Big Thunder Mountain was actually better than the Disneyland version.
Which I think it's arguable still that it is, especially when you're riding through the little town sequence, which if you go to our Instagram, we have a buddy who took some pictures that I'm going to be putting up there for us, and he definitely has some really cool shots that he got of that area. And if you remember the town that was referenced in the original storyline for, what was it? Western River Expedition. Holy mackerel.
Oh, we have, wow, there's a lot of attractions.
I think that I am definitely wearing these Thunder headsets a little too long. So back in our first episode, we talked about Thunder Mesa, and in Thunder Mesa, there was an area called Western River Expedition. And
yes.
In that area, there was a tiny town called Tumbleweed. And the little tiny town of Tumbleweed is now one of the features in the splashdown area on the Big Thunder Mountain Railroad area.
Gotcha.
So we'll be putting some pictures up there from our friend of the podcast, which his Instagram handle is Skipper Freddy, if you want to follow him. And stay tuned to our Instagram page to see those pictures coming through. But I would still argue that there's something awesome about the Walt Disney World Big Thunder Mountain.
They're both really great attractions in their own right, and you really can't go wrong. And I mean, as far as the one in Disneyland, an explosion is really, I mean, it just pretty much always makes something a little better, right?
Oh, without a doubt.
And I also, the rocks teeter on the edge as though they're about to fall on top of us, which is yet another throwback to attractions of yore, which is a callback to Balancing Rock that guests saw during their ride on Mine Train through Nature's Wonderland.
That is just so awesome. If you didn't ride any of those attractions before, you would never know any of this stuff was a callback. But because there are so many people who are so devoted to the park, they just can't help but get giddy with delight when you see these types of things.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I didn't know about that, but I can still learn later and still appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is also, I really like that they're respectful of the old engineer's legacy. They're not like, we're going to tear it down and make a, you know, all new experience. Like they're respectful of the past and the innovations that were that paved the way for what they're doing now.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. Now, I would say before this whole area caves in on us, we should probably get to the top of Sea Lift here and get ready to experience the biggest letdown of Frontierland, my friend.
Really? A letdown?
This drop is like a complete, or lack of a drop, has always let down everybody who comes out of Sea Lift. Here you are, like, this is the big climactic penultimate moment, and then you just literally roll right out. It's like, oh, so there really wasn't that much peril. We were just able to roll right out. I want to be whipped around and know that there's something dangerous, but that's just not the feeling you get.
You want to be blown out of a mountain.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I get that. Well, I guess you get a nice rush at the bottom of the hill as you kind of rush over the waterways of the frontier, right?
That's true. And this is the first time that you actually get a straight-on view of the train station that you came from. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
But if you look over on the left as we pass down this little area where we're approaching the little river area, you can see a water area across from Big Thunder Mountain Railroad there.
I've always wondered what that was all about.
That's actually where the ride path of Mine Train through Nature's Wonderland and Rainbow Caverns used to run. When they built Thunder, they left it there as a little homage to the Frontierland of old.
Okay, and as we pass the exposed bones of an ancient T-Rex, I hear the sounds of the last tribute to the attractions of yore. That's right, at the end of the attraction, we pass through the little town of Rainbow Ridge itself. We can hear the hustle and bustle of the little mining town. The buildings used for this section are the backdrop for the loading area of Mine Train and Rainbow Caverns.
Which, again, is really cool. I personally love this area, especially because you can see it from the queue area. It gets you kind of excited about what you're about to experience on the ride, and then it comes literally full circle when you come off the attraction and you're hearing the little conversations going on. And that's the thing that's cool, too, is even though you only hear the conversations and you hear the sounds for about 7-ish seconds, if you're lucky, while on the train, they still put a ton of time and detail into this area.
And that's something that I think is characteristic of Big Thunder Mountain, is doing a lot with a little bit, and that definitely applies to the speed. It feels like you're just whooshing through the Wild West at a breakneck speed, but the maximum speed is actually around 30 miles per hour.
Which is crazy. Again, I feel like it's because it's so immersive that you lose perspective, and it never, ever lets you down whenever you ride Big Thunder Mountain.
I couldn't agree more. But we have sadly come to the end of the line, as it were. It's time to pack it in and move it on out, pal.
Well, before we do, I kind of think that, because this is, I don't know why people are so fascinated by this, but I kind of feel like we need to address the 2003 accident that happened on the ride.
Yeah, there was a bad one in 2003. Somebody passed away, right?
Yeah. Well, and this is where I want to be extremely respectful and don't want to go into, like, rumor or anything stupid like that, because it is more of a serious topic. But yeah, there was a pretty big accident in 2003. And unfortunately, like you said, somebody did pass away. Now, the cool thing is, from that, Disney, who is under the umbrella of what's called OSHA, the Occupational Safety Hazard something, or I think I just butchered that. I don't know what OSHA stands for. I'm not going to lie.
No, Occupational Safety and Hazard, Safety and Health Administration. Occupational Safety and Health Administration, yeah. Or Hazard, so, Health or Hazard, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Health.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's Health. But they passed new laws in the state of California that required even more safety measures for Disney to follow. And I can say, again, from riding the attraction, from working and operating the attraction, safety is the number one priority of that company, simply because they care for the people who are coming through there. And also, I mean, that's bad business when you're
sure.
in situations like that. And it was a really rough time because in, I think, 1998, there was a big issue with the sailing ship Columbia, where there was an accident with one of the masts.
Somebody
that
lost some digits.
Well, somebody actually was hit in the head with the situation that I'm talking about and was killed on the Columbia as a result of this.
In the late 80s and kind of 90s, well, no, this was like the later 90s and early 2000s, the maintenance in the park wasn't as good as it should have been.
And I will also say this, though, that, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm defending anything or anything like that.
Sure, yeah.
But knowing that they've had how many hundreds of millions of people come through.
Yeah.
And, I mean, every life is obviously valuable. Yet I look at the devotion that the company has to safety and have to say, well done with what you guys do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But getting back to Big Thunder Mountain, you were saying that they've updated the track and they've made a lot of changes. Everything that happened that led to the accident, they've corrected and then some. So I think it's one of the more safer attractions that you could ride now.
I would agree. And again, I think that the reason why I bring that up, I was actually hesitating to talk about that during this walkthrough because I wasn't sure if it was a good thing for us to talk about or not, but I feel like it's part of the story of Big Thunder Mountain, and because of the internet age, I think the internet was just starting to explode around that time in 2003, like to prominence, and as a result, I think there's been a lot of rumors and kind of a lot of gross stuff that's been said about this, and a lot of conjecture. And it was a tragedy, without a doubt. I mean, I have talked to people and know people personally who are working that day. And it's amazing to see even to that point when I was working there, was 5 years after it had happened. And the people that I spoke to about it, they would still become emotional over what had happened there. And it's one of those things that a lot of people take really lightly, and I don't know if it's necessarily, I shouldn't say don't know, I know it's not something to take lightly, and but at the same time, it's part of the heritage, part of the story, and on the backside, it was a huge tragedy, and thankfully, Disney responded in such a way that the safety of guests is even more now than ever the most important and number one key of the four keys at the Disney parks.
Right. Well, and the thing that I think is a little makes this an extra tragedy is this: the guest wasn't there wasn't any wrongdoing on his part. It was a man in his late 20s.
Yeah, he was 22.
And he was just riding the attraction, and then it broke down in a big way, and things kind of didn't go well, and he ended up dying. So I don't know exactly what happened into the end. Somehow it was like, I think it came like it was a blunt force thing that killed him. But I don't want to get like too in depth or too medical or anything. But they've corrected the issue. But that's the thing that's a little bit kind of horrifying and about the story and just. filled. It's just kind of a part of living in life. You don't know exactly, you know, a meteor could crash through my ceiling at this moment, and just weird stuff happens sometimes. And sometimes that weird stuff is in Disneyland, unfortunately.
So. Yeah. Well, and again, like I said, the company has, without a doubt, addressed the issues, fixed the issues, improved the overall attraction experience worldwide. And safety is the penultimate goal of every time you step through that park. So you don't really have to worry. I shouldn't say really. You don't have to worry when you're going into a park, because that's the last thing that you want is to fear, am I actually going to be in peril on a ride like Big Thunder Mountain?
Am I going to be able to survive to tell people about the great day that I had? And the answer is, of course you will.
Exactly. And that's the thing that I am a little bit sad about, is whenever we're done with this attraction, there's that little melancholy feel as you go clack, clack, clack and into the station and are greeted back by a miner. Yeah, exactly. It's really sad because as you step off, you know the ride's done. Obviously, you can get back in line. But there's nothing like riding Big Thunder Mountain Railroad for the very first time.
Well, I'll see what I can come up with to send off this attraction right. So, folks, remember that from its humble beginnings as Western Mine Train through Nature's Wonderland, to its colorful transformation to the Rainbow Caverns Mine Train, to the rootin' tootin' thrill ride it is today, the many forms of Big Thunder Mountain Railroad have delighted families for over 60 years. We hope this great railroad continues to delight generations of families as they find out that no matter their differences, they can still come together to experience the thunder and thrills of the wildest ride in the wilderness.
Back to the real world, or the open wilderness for us. Man, Harry, I'm ready to get home, man. Why don't we just wrap this little journey up?
Slow your bedroll, bud. We still need to say our goodbyes. Folks, we wanted to thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. We appreciate you sitting through our shenanigans, which sometimes get various degrees of distracted and off topic. If you like what you hear, consider writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. Of course, we're on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, so don't be no kind of stranger. Just search the Backside of Water podcast and reach out to us. We also have a sister podcast called Did You Know Disney, where we cover not just Disneyland, but all things Disney, including movies, history, and wild speculation.
Now, this is also a good time to note that we're going to be riding into the sunset on our Frontierland series with this very episode.
Aww.
How crazy is it that we're already done with Frontierland?
It's crazy.
Wow.
And I'm really excited about Fantasyland next. Really excited.
I am too. I really am too. Now, I think one of the things that we also need to say right here is 'tis the season for us on the Backside of Water to take our little end of the year break with our episodes that we're releasing. So that means that from now, we are going to be taking a break until probably the mid part of January. This is just time for us to focus on families, the season, friends, celebrating everybody and everything that we do during the holiday season. And as much as we love podcasting, we feel like for us, it's that little season of recharge. Since this is a year-round thing, it's our ability just to sit back, reflect on the year, enjoy the time with our families, but we're not going to leave you high and dry. So, if you are interested in what we've got cooking, I strongly suggest that you wait, because we are going to release a little season's greeting on the podcast channel. That's going to be a temporary thing that will let you know what you can look forward to in the interim period, because it's kind of exciting. So we're going to do a little mm-hmm. season's greeting and teaser for the upcoming, I don't want to call it a hiatus because it's not a hiatus. We're just going to call it a mid-season break.
Sure. Well, we're just taking, we do this consistently where we we take a little bit of time off to recharge and spend time with our families and friends during the holidays. So we are keeping Disney on the back burner and thinking about that, and always, you know, always dreaming about better ways to research and get better information and make a better show for y'all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we look forward to coming back at the beginning of January of 2018, which is incredible. And with that, we will also be returning with Fantasyland, which is going to be awesome. There's just something, I don't know.
So much history. So much history.
Just something exciting for me, knowing that we have taken our sweet, precious time walking through this park. And here we are pretty much at the halfway point now. And seeing that we've had so many memories, so many awesome experiences, so many learning experiences, and knowing that we're going into it, it feels like a new horizon and a new world as we come into 2018. This is the first time that it's ever like perfectly cut off like this for us, where we take our mid-season break and come back with a brand new steaming hot land of cool stuff for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Are you going...
So we're...
Wait, hold on. Oh. Hey, hold on. I got something to say.
No, sorry. All right, Cookie. I got a little too... I'm feeling a little disoriented, so...
I was just wondering if you boys are going to stare on the back of them mules all day, or looking into the sun with them thunder goggles, or are you going to go do something?
Cookie, we were exploring Big Thunder Mountain Railroad with the Ultra Neural Temporal Holographic Recreation Experience Disney.
You know, they could actually call that the unthread, if that's how it is. But that kind of confusion comes with late-stage dehydration. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Well, let me tell you, I recommend some Trader Sam's coffee to wet your parched whistle.
Great idea, Cookie.
So as you exit, please watch your head and watch your step. And if you happen to miss your step and hit your head, please watch your language. Goodbye.
Bye.